Welcome to the Barth Calderon Wealth Protector Podcast. Our founder, Harry Barth, and his son, Brad, are top speakers on asset protection and estate planning to many incredible groups across the country, including the Women Presidents Organization, Vistage, the Young Presidents Organization, the California Apartment Association, and many more. And now, here is your host, Paul Hitchcock.
Everybody, this is Paul Hitchcock. Thanks for jumping on Wealth Protector TV. This is the channel for the firm Barth Calderon, asset protection, estate planning, and business planning. Really excited for the guests today. I have Harry Barth, who is the founder and senior managing partner of Barth Calderon. Welcome, Harry.
Good to be here, Paul.
Yeah,
good to see you, Scott.
Yeah, and Scott Skillman's here, is a very successful Vistage chair in Florida, and we're talking about couple things here. Is first of all, Scott, we want to get into your practice at Vistage. We want to hear about, you know, what you're doing there, what industries you're working with, open seats you have there, and just how everything's going. And then we're going to get over to Harry talking about asset protection and why it's important for business owners to understand how that works. Scott, what's going on with your practice?
So you know, I just moved recently, a year ago, from San Diego back to Florida. I had four Vistage groups when I was out in San Diego, two CEO groups, one key group, which is one tier down from the CEOs, and then a Vistage inside group. Moving here, I've just built a new CEO group here in the Northeast Florida area around Jacksonville. And the different verticals, distribution of janitorial products, franchising of different drinks, wealth management, HVAC, construction management, software, ERP implementation, as well as business magazine companies. So it's quite a bit of a mix. I still have room for, you know, several other verticals, you know, healthcare, looking for professional services, whether it's insurance or banking or accounting, that type of situation. So, you know, Vistage is a wide variety of verticals, and that's one of the beauties of it, is you get those perspectives that are not just from the same view, which helps you alleviate blind spots.
Yeah, because Scott, the way your practice is set up, you're meeting monthly with all the CEOs in one room, highly collaborative. Everyone's working on each other's businesses, and you're doing one-to-ones beyond that.
Yeah, so it's it basically meets one day a month where you shut the door and everybody acts as a an advisor or the sounding board for your complicated issues, messy issues, or biggest opportunities where you're not quite ready to go to your board, or if it's a family-owned business, you're not ready to go to the prior generation, or if you're a bootstrapper, it's just you want to hear some of the seasoned or sage CEOs in the room, give them a little bit of your advice. And then, of course, in the one-to-ones, that's 90 minutes a month, just the CEO and myself, and we're covering a lot of the issues in detail, such as the items that you're not ready to bring to the group yet, or areas where you want to personally focus.
Yeah, and Scott, when you're doing the group meetings, I know you're processing issues there. And are these CEOs, your CEOs, are they really getting into it, get into the gutter and opening up and bringing issues to the table? And you see an interactivity there?
Yeah, it's actually pretty amazing. You know, I was a member for about 4 years before I became a chair 5 years ago. And as much as I thought it would be sort of a surface meetings, you actually really do get down into the bowels of them. We've seen situations where CEOs of large companies actually get down and roll up their sleeves with guys in very small companies. You get individuals that find those nuggets or revelations that come out of meetings. You start to find where, you know, so many different CEOs actually deal with the same issues, even though you think your business is completely different than the next person.
Oh, yeah. Wonderful. Harry, let's jump over to you and start getting into asset protection. As you learn a little bit about what Scott's doing and working with, what is asset protection? Why is it important for owners?
Well, it's important. I've been speaking Scott Vistage for 20 years. Matter of fact, I'm surprised I didn't speak to your groups in San Diego. But I've probably, you know, done about 300 some odd talks just on asset protection. And that's what we do. There's 30 professionals that work with me. And it's an interesting thing. You know, people don't really know what it is. But I'll tell you this. There is not a single Vistage member, not a single one, that says, I want my assets to be exposed to the claims of creditors. Everybody, there's some background noise. Everybody wants asset protection. And it's how it's done, and the meaning of it as to whether or not they do it. But everybody, you ask, if I say, do you want to pay more income taxes? No. You want your assets exposed to the claims of creditors? No. So, matter of fact, I think Paul and Scott, could you just for a second mute yourself, see if we can get that background noise down?
So I just muted me. So let me mute myself.
Okay. So now that's it. I think now we're not getting the background feedback.
Yeah. So I'm off of mute. Now I can edit this up, but I'm off of mute. But Scott, okay. You got background noise going on there. But when you want to ask questions, you can unmute yourself, ask a question. But so when you muted yourself, it got the background stuff went away.
Disappeared. Okay. So back to where we were. So this is for new CEOs and existing CEOs. So a new CEO, one of the reasons that they join Vistage, I'm a Vistage member as well, is to get the insight and their Vistage speakers and to bring these specialized areas that they normally wouldn't get a chance to learn about. So one of the things that hopefully as people take a look at what we're talking about today, they'll begin to see some of the insight that they'll get as a Vistage member. But today we're going to talk a little bit about asset protection. So let's talk about what it is and what it isn't. Asset protection is not hiding your assets, making them confidential, making them secret, putting your assets in some banana republic somewhere. There's nothing to do with that. But asset protection is also not about the mitigation of risk. The risk comes with the business. You guys will work on that in the Vistage meeting and issues all day long. It's about the doubt as to collectability. It's about saying, okay, God forbid we do have liability, be it to the business or to them personally. How can we get out of this thing quicker? How do we get a mediated settlement that gets us out with our pants on? How do we turn around and get out of this quicker than a long protracted litigation? And how we structure our assets, how we structure our businesses, and I'm going to give you some specific examples of that, is highly dependent on whether or not we get those results. So let's give you an example. And, you know, I'm very familiar with Florida law, so this is a little bit of this will be state specific. So give you an example of good percentage, for example, of your members, so to speak, many of them are corporations and many of them are S corporations. And so we have two things. We're going to give you an example of two things. So one is a liability that rises up as a result of the operations of their business. Sexual harassment, contractual violations, accidents that are on the premises, all kinds of contractual liability, wage and hour issues, all of those issues that come up to the company, they bring potential litigation to the entity. So you look inside the entity and what do I see? I see a large amount of receivables and or inventory sitting inside. I see Scott, CEOs that, that instructed their company, they have a large amount of either investments or a large amount of cash, way more than they need for minimal working capital. I see intellectual property that's in there. I see machines that are in there. And sometimes I even see, mistakenly, real estate that's in there, because, you know, in Florida, you know, if the real estate is owned by the entity, they don't necessarily have to pay the sales tax. But if real estate is owned by a separate entity and leased to the business, there's a sales tax in Florida. So they kind of conjure all this up. So you find that 75, sometimes to 80% of that particular entrepreneur's net worth is in the business, and all of the eggs are in one basket. This is a formula for disaster. So one of the things that they need to look at from an asset protection perspective is how would the business best satisfy a claim that comes in? You know, how do we separate that? How do we get assets that are out of the business and held in other particular places that could make that business more, we'll call it more, not lawsuit proof, but better able to withstand an inroad? So that's one, we'll call it one level of asset protection. But here's one that's really interesting. First, some statistics, Scott. 50 million lawsuits a year in the United States of America. That's an awful lot. 95% of all litigation in the world, United States of America. What the hell? Why? Because we have contingency fee lawyers. Other places don't have that. We have punitive damages. Other places don't have that. We don't have loser pays attorney's fees. You know, so you have all these issues and problems that create a significant, we'll call it litigious society. And what the business owners don't usually recognize, and we see this universally over 5,000 business clients over my 50 years, is that when there's a liability to the owner of the business, your CEO many times is the owner. Sometimes they're just hired guns, and sometimes their owners, or, you know, one of many owners. When the liability is coming not from the business, but to the owner of the business. So the owner of the business has a dog, all right? It's a big, bad German Shepherd, used to be in the White House. And that big, bad German Shepherd bites somebody in the face. And now there's a multi-million dollar lawsuit against that person for that dog. And now we look down, Scott, as to what they own. And they own the stock in that corporation. I don't care if it's Skillman Co. I don't care if it's McDonald's. If I have a liability to the owner, I get the stock. If I get the stock, I get control. If I get control, I can liquidate the business. I could sell off the IP. I can take all the receivables. The business is gone. And believe it or not, more businesses are lost from that outside-in liability than inside-out liability. And that can be changed. So what that could have done is we could have changed the organization, not the tax structure, but the organizational, legal organizational structure of that business, so that could never, ever, ever happen. Ever. They could never lose control of their business. At best, even in Florida, which has a kind of a funky law when it comes to LLCs, for example. Even in Florida, it can be structured in such a way that the best that a creditor can get, if there's a liability to the owner, is a lien over distributions. They won't be able to reach inside and touch the assets. They won't be able to liquidate anything. They won't be able to get managerial control. They can't even force a distribution. Wow. When business owners hear about that, they say, well, why didn't my attorney or my accountant, somebody tell me about this? Because that's not what they do. It's not the asset protection component that they're concerned about. So we see things like that happening all the time in business. Just as an example of the structure of the business.
Are there any industries that are excluded from that sort of a strategy?
Well, it depends on the state. So in Florida, not very many are excluded from that strategy. Florida has one issue that the state legislature, don't ask me why, Florida is a great state for asset protection. Homes are protected, annuities are protected, life insurance, cash values are protected. Great state, has a great attitude towards asset protection. But there are two things that in Florida that are kind of weird. Scott, you have to know this, a single member LLC in Florida, It was a Florida Supreme Court case. A single member LLC in Florida doesn't get any protection at all. So if I have a liability to the owner and it's a single member LLC, that's their business in Florida, it's not going to be very protective. In that scenario in Florida, it's just simple. It's like being a little pregnant. You make a multi-member LLC, create a trust for the children. You know, there's a few things you can do, you know, between spouses, you can make a multi-member LLC to get out of that particular problem. And Florida also, is a state that doesn't recognize asset protection trusts, strangely enough, but has great state tax law in Florida as compared to other states. But well, we use different states in Florida for providing for asset protection. The other thing, too, is that Florida has some documentary transfer tax problems. And like I told you, they have, if you have real property that's owned by an LLC the way it should be owned, and it's leased, you know, either as a rental property or it's leased to the business, there's a sales tax that's imposed in Florida. It's actually a small price to pay for the asset protection that's gotten. So Florida's really, really, really good state. And one of the things that's so important, really important for all business owners, and believe me, I have thousands of Vistage members I've spoken to, is to at least know what eyes wide open rather than eyes wide shut. These are my vulnerabilities. These are the options to deal with those. And then they could decide, you know, with their chair and in the group, the things that they want to do or not do, but they should know what they are. And sometimes ignorance is not bliss, especially in the area that I work in.
Yeah, and Harry, let me ask you a quick question. Where does the baton handoff happen between asset protection and estate and trust services and wealth management and that type of thing?
Sure, absolutely. They're all okay. So wealth management services is not part of that. So wealth management services is financial planning, financial services, investment advisory. They could comment upon, you know, estate tax issues. And if they had the knowledge, they could comment on the asset protection issues, but it's strictly a legal position. That's number one. It's all law all the way. Now, the handoff between advanced estate planning, we do a significant amount of advanced estate planning and estate planning, is not quite as clear. Because many of the tools that are used to minimize federal estate taxes are similar tools that are used to protect assets from the claims of third-party creditors. So for example, I'll give you another example of that, which we call non-reciprocal spousal lifetime access trusts. And in those types of trusts, they're designed, you know, right now, Scott, you got $26 million that you guys can pass, and a husband and wife down to the next generation, without the imposition of a federal transfer tax. January 1st, 2026, that puppy's gonna drop from $23 million down to $12 million. And now we gotta give the feds 40% of everything that's above that. And that's a horror show, and it's coming. And pretty much nothing is going to stop that, really, unless we had a red White House, a red House, and a filibuster-proof Senate that's red, it's gonna drop to $12 million. But there are certain trusts that are available to us now that can lock in, for example, that $26 million of exemption before it drops to 12. That's worth about $6 million to a family. But why am I telling you this? So it's not just the $26 million that gets set aside or locking in the $26 million before it turns to 12. And all the growth of that is exempt from the claims of the federal estate tax. So if $26 million grows to $50 million over the course of a lifetime, they die, feds are still going to get not a penny, and that's a $20 million savings. But what's important is all the money that's sitting within spousal lifetime access trust are exempt from the claims of creditors. So if someone has a liability, that dog bite, crashes the car, or problems, you can't get into that trust in order to satisfy that claim. So there's an example of a crossover between estate planning and asset protection planning. So there really isn't a baton handoff. It's a baton integration in looking at that. You have to look at the goals and the objectives. So for example, you have a CEO and their total net worth all in is $9 million, all right? You don't have an estate tax problem. You have probate issues, you have, you know, family issues, you have, you know, everyone's going to fight about who gets the China pot. You have all of that, but they don't have estate tax issues and may never have estate tax issues, even with the reduction, but they do have asset protection issues. So in that case, it's not an integration. But when you look at a client that has a larger estate, is in estate tax territory, or may become subject to estate tax, you're looking at the estate tax, and then you, at the same time, on a parallel path, you're looking at the asset protection components for them. And here's one of the other things, Scott. It just may sound a little ludicrous. I've seen so many people, they spend a lot of money planning their estates, and then they have gotten embroiled, sadly, in some really ground-shaking litigation, and there's no estate left. You know, it's been significantly reduced. And, you know, we think that those things don't really happen, but they do. When you have a, we'll call it a constituency, as we have, of 5,000 businesses across the country, every week there's somebody that has a problem. And it's all good people that have had problems. I had, for example, this is just an awful case. I had a gal, she owned an event. She provided labor for events, you know, at all these different conferences and things of that nature. And she's very, very significant Vistage member. And her CFO embezzled about $4 million from the company, including money that was supposed to go to the IRS. All right, but there's a $4 million. Now, that person is serving time in prison now. They got him. They arrested him. They convicted him. He's in prison. She couldn't recover from that $4 million. And the company filed bankruptcy. The company filed bankruptcy, but she had personal guarantees on many of the loans. So her bank accounts, her rental properties, and even her home some other dude did it. She lost everything. That should never have happened with appropriate and proper asset protection plan. Matter of fact, if there was proper proactive and preemptive planning, probably would have never signed the guarantees without carve outs and other things that should have been in there. So again, you don't make the risk go away. You mitigate the risk and you try to get a resolution should, God forbid, something come along. So there's the baton handoff between those two is muddy at best.
What about situation where you have succession, you want to have succession of your business, but it's not tied into a spouse?
Okay. So succession of a business not tied into spouse is, well, when you say that, are there children that are involved or is it a management succession? So here's what happens. So when you ask 75% of business owners and in that small to medium-sized business where they are the owners of the business about their exit planning. This is what you're talking about is exit planning, succession planning. About 70% of them will say they would like to see the business go to either their children, the ones that are at least actively involved in the business, which has a whole host of issues because not every child is in the business, or to key management and key employees. But here's an interesting statistic. 80% of those desires never happen. And 80% of the time, it's sold to an outside third party. Why? Well, those people, the key employees and the children, one, they have no money. So because they have no money, they don't have the ability to purchase the business. So then your CEO, your Vistage member becomes the bank. Got to hold the paper. They never get away. Now their management is gone. The other people take over, but they're holding it. What they wanted to do is get away from the business and get rid of the stress of the business. And they're worried every month that the business is doing well, because if they don't get the payments coming as a result of the installment note, three quarters of the time, they won't be able to pay their bill. So it's kind of, so they'd rather take their chips off the table, and that gets diminished along the way. So you have one is the thoughts of the succession plan, and then the other, which is what happens. And of course you have voluntary exits and you have involuntary exits. The involuntary, you know, they had a heart attack, they had dementia, you know, things, they're incapacitated. There's an involuntary exit, and now what happens versus the one that they've had 2-3 years of runway to plan for it. And there are ways to have key employees purchase the business without you being the bank, but you need 5 years of runway. Now, the other thing too is that other than spouse, so as you know, many times the spouse has nothing to do with the business. So what happens is if you got a business, also there's a fourth option where a business has been built up. It's quite a successful business. And the key there, and a key for your kind of instruction to them, if they have strong management, I mean, if they can have a third-party president who runs the business effectively, who's paid well with good incentives, maybe a phantom stock plan or a stock appreciation right plan, if they could do that, and now the spouse, for example, and or the kids are owners of the business, but not operators of the business, and the distributions are really, that's a really good investment. It's like a legacy type investment. We have clients that have six families own the entity. Not one of the members of the six families have ever seen the inside of the business, and they each get $5 million a year in distributions. Lucky them. But, you know, but the CEO gets paid $2.5 million a year to run that business, and it's a really, really good business. So if they want that option, that requires really strong management at the top. So the family is holding on to the business rather than succeeding the business. They're succeeding the ownership of the business, but not the operation of the business. So the whole area of succession planning / exit planning is based upon a couple of factors. Factor number one, what is the real value of the business? People have a tendency to not understand that. You and I both know that. You know, the number that they think their business is worth is like someone's home. Sometimes they think it's worth a little bit more than a buyer is willing to pay for it. So they need to do some, we'll call it, there's your wealth management, the financial planning and the wealth management, to determine that if they sold their business at X price, can they still remain in their own world? Can they pay their bills? You know, and maybe they can't. So then maybe they got to build up the business. I had a client literally had an offer to sell the business at $15 million. We evaluated that offer. We rejected it. And they sold their business 6 years later for $52 million. Wow. What they do, though, they were making cases for iPhones when iPhones were first coming out. You know, matter of fact, you would know the company. It's called Spec. Spec is, these are cases. They make cases for iPhones and iPads. And that's a classic example. If you have enough time to look at a business cycle, you can do it. So you got to do some financial planning. You got to look at some tax attributes involved. And then you got to look at who the heck's going to run the business. Scott, you know, is it kids? And then what happens if you got one kid who's deeply involved in the business and two kids couldn't care less about the business? Then the parents get into, you know, it's not fair, it's not equal. And then if you leave one kid to run the business and the two siblings as owners, that's counterintuitive. Why would he build a business for half of the other two who don't show up? I mean, it's a great question, but it's also an omnibus area of analysis that takes place. Do a lot of exit planning. That's integrated into estate planning, all right, which are all integrated into asset protection planning, because if the business is not protected, there's nothing to go to the next generation in case that, God forbid, there's a problem. And sadly, there are too many.
Question. Tell me a bit of difference when it comes to asset protection on with intangible assets versus tangible.
Okay. Well, you got the granddaddy of all tangible assets, which is real estate. And then you have intangible assets, stocks, bonds, cash, notes, promissory notes, mortgages that you've invested in, fund banks, you know, money markets, all those fungible types of assets. And then you have tangible assets that are art, wine collections, a collection of classic cars that's worth millions of dollars, you know. They got the classic Ferrari that's worth $5 million. I mean, we've seen them all.
Star Wars collection, we've had that.
Yeah, I've got a Star Wars collection worth millions of dollars. So here's the difference. It kind of gets around to some of the things that we've been listening to on the news of late. Cash, stocks, bonds, fungible assets can be moved, can be held in different jurisdictions, can do a lot of things you can do. They're very malleable, very flexible. You're not going to move a piece of real estate. You got a piece of real estate on, in Jacksonville. It's a piece of real estate in Jacksonville. Having a international trust own the piece of real estate in Jacksonville isn't going to do very much good. Now, if that piece of real estate in Jacksonville is held by an LLC and the membership interest is held by an international trust, as a lot of people promote, still doesn't do any good because the court will just go right through it because it sits in the ground. So There you have to rely upon a local law. So that type of tangibles, the wine collection can't be moved. You know, the art collection can't be moved, but they can be protected. Walls can be built around them. Usually it's done by placing the art, for example, within a limited liability company, appropriately structured in the proper jurisdiction, and then having that art LLC owned by an appropriate asset protection trust. There is good protection that's involved there. There are ways. The way you can look at it, Scott, is walls, you know, layers. You know, if you just own things directly and outright, come take me, I'm yours. If you put a few walls, a few layers around it, it leads itself to a mediated settlement because it's much more difficult now for that potential creditor to reach those assets. The difficulty is the very important part of asset protection. Okay.
This interesting topic. Tell me this, in working with CEOs, how many of them do you think really get it before you have a conversation with them?
Get what? I mean, the liability? Yeah. Well, that's really interesting. I would say that I could talk to this very specifically. Over the last, we'll call it 20 some odd years, that virtually none of them do. But they've all taken small steps, Scott. In other words, I say small. Well, the businesses are corporations, or they formed an LLC to own the real estate. You know, that's asset protection. You know, or they bought an umbrella liability policy, you know, to cover them. They crash the car and kill five people. They've done that. Those are small pieces, but have they done a comprehensive asset protection analysis to see their vulnerabilities and what their options are? Virtually none. Not all, some have. Some have done, you know, really good jobs with working with competent asset protection attorneys. You look right in and say, yeah, that's well done. But the vast majority of the answer to that question is no, they have not. And it's really eye-opening that when they finally do take a look, they do a little due diligence, they take the time, they're not doing anything now, they're just analyzing, they're looking at their assets, they're looking at their liabilities, they're looking at their insurance programs, they're looking at, what they did is they said, okay, tell me where the weaknesses are, tell me what I'm not seeing, and you tell them what they are, and you have to demonstrate why it is what it is, and then say, tell me, what are my options? Now remember, Scott, an option is to do nothing. An option is to insure it to a third party, not always a legal solution. Sometimes it's a combination of the two, legal solutions and insurance. Sometimes they say, you know what? I'll accept the risk. That's too complicated for me. It doesn't allow me the flexibility. But you know what? They do that knowledgeably. That's the most important thing. There are risks that I accept, that you accept, that Paul accepts, that, you know, sometimes it's just way too much overhead to put asset protection structures around certain types of things. But you know what? You know the risk. You now know how to mitigate that risk as best as you possibly can. But the answer to your question directly is virtually none of them, until they speak to someone similar to me, really take the time. And then usually what happens is, how fast can you get it done? How fast can you get it done? How much does it cost me? And then the worst of all, Scott, is when we get the calls. You know, I spoke to you about a year ago. I heard you speak, and I heard this videotape that you and Paul did. Well, we have a problem. One of my employees crashed a car, killed three people. We're getting sued now. You're an asset protection attorney. What can you do for me? The most important concept in asset protection, it needs to be preemptive, proactive, and done when there are no lines. And people say, well, I haven't been sued yet. It's when the events or the facts that gave rise to the liability occur that actually starts the clock running.
Yeah, we see that a lot with different CEOs when it comes to, say, CapEx decisions. What will happen is they can quantify what the cost is, but it's the soft savings that they can't quantify, so they always lean towards hard costs. So it's that this is how much it'll cost me to put an asset protection plan in place, but the soft side is so much more valuable than the hard cost.
Sure.
But that's how they normally make their decisions, is based on hard numbers.
Yeah, some. I have 5,000 people that made the decisions all the way, but yes, so true. And for those people, they, you know, they do what they do. Not everybody's going to turn around and take advice. And I still have, the other day, I have people still operating a business as a sole proprietor, you know, for 15 years. What are you, out of your mind? Well, I didn't want to spend money for an LLC or a corporation. Oh my God almighty. But you know, it happens. That's the way it goes. So Paul and Scott, any other questions that you'd like to talk about today?
No, I'll say great questions, Scott. Thanks. And I'll say to everybody watching this, thanks so much. And I highly suggest to get connected, Scott and Harry, wherever you're watching this, because we stream it everywhere. You're going to have the opportunity to get on a call with Scott, book that, and get also a free strategy session with Harry. Both these gentlemen will be ready to talk with you. Thanks so much. Thanks, Scott. Thanks, Harry.
All right, guys. Thank you.
Thank you, Harry. Thanks, Paul.